I'm coming off a speech to 50-ish and 60-ish government executives, followed by the wedding of two 20-ish and 30-ish folk, and the return home of our 24-year-old college graduate young worker. Generational shifts are not only on my mind, but they're shifting the cultural ground beneath my feet. I feel a little shook. This may be a real duh column of significance only to a white male middle-aged straight Christian guy, but putting forth these limitations that frame my perception, I plod forward. I wasn't really intending to talk much about young people these days to the 200-some government executives to whom I was speaking about change last week, but because I speak from the floor and not from the safety of a podium, and I ask and sample as much as I assert and instruct, this old people's lament was what I heard. They were concerned about succession planning because their retirements were fast approaching, and they were concerned about recruitment, retention, and motivation. They had little good to say about the end of the alphabet generations X and Y and Z. "Maybe that's what they're like at Berkeley," a man responded to my general optimism, and a wave of laughter and nods followed as many decried the lack of motivation, loyalty, and initiative they see among young government workers. So, hold that picture. The wedding I attended was of my children's generation, new for me. A fellow old fart and I murmured at the reception that our dads must have been rolling in their graves. Like our pops, we fancy we stand for and stand with tradition. As a feminist myself, I know tradition has tended to stand more forcibly for guys like me and him. In our comfort zones, weddings ought come with wise ministers or rabbis, ancient wisdom from a book of leather or gold or a magnificent scroll. Not this weekend. Here, joy and frivolity were big. We sons of World War II-era guys were a little skittish when it comes to joy, let alone frivolity. Instead, we think the sobriety of the vows ought to take center stage. That vow, in our should-dominated world, rises up as a statement of will and force, driven to be sure by fear and trembling. But to us these days, a vow seems more like a poem or a hope. What to make of this? At work and in family, these young people are different. They're in so many ways a product of and a reaction to, well, to us. One, our establishment companies have treated their parents as cost centers when it came to cost cutting. No surprise that blind loyalty is not in their arsenal. Two, they're the adult children of workaholics and don't want to sacrifice their life to work. Three, they've known 50% divorce rates. Four, they've been marginalized by churches. And five, can anyone say government shutdown? They've been let down by government leaders. They are at once profoundly skeptical, they'd say realistic, sold on living for today, and yet, and this is easy for me to miss, they're wanting to make our world a better place, in their own way, as we sought and still do desire to change the world in our way. How do you bridge this gap? What does it ask of you? I believe I have two responsibilities, neither of which comes easy to me. One, listen more than I talk. It's trite to write, but they see as much or more than I do about the present, because the culture and technology of their formative years matters more than that of mine. Moreover, the future belongs to them. They, more than we, will lead. Time inexorable. Two, work with them to make our institutions worth committing to. I think they want to belong and commit. Most humans do. But we, as much as they, need to work to make sure our institutions, our workplaces, governments, religious institutions, etc., are working as hard as we can to incorporate their input and energy and perspective. Maybe it's worth asking not how do we help them fit into our world, but how do we fit into their world, the world coming into being? Do you too find this hard work as you lead with your best self?